This is Phil Farron. And I am driving my dad home from having a few tests done. Duncan Clegg. That's what it is. So it's kind of a special. I'm backing up one moment. I'll get back forward here in a second. It's kind of a special podcast today. I had mentioned yesterday that I was going to be taking my dad to see the doctor. Well, actually, to get some tests done. And because of the topic that we had yesterday, talking about uncertainty and how you deal with uncertainty, I thought, you know, as long as I'm taking my dad to the doctor, it would be interesting to talk about the second way that I think we have in our lives to deal with uncertainty. If the car sounds funny, that's because I'm driving my parents' Lincoln Continental. What is this, a 1998 Lincoln Continental. And it has all of 67,000 miles on it. This is going to be one of those old cars that when people buy it, they'll say,
yeah,
I knew this old couple and I bought this car.
And they kept it in the garage all the time.
And they kept it in the garage all the time. And it's red. Yeah. My mom was so thrilled when they got this car. She called me up.
She didn't want red, but then she thought, well, the Lord told me it'll be all right. You'll get used to it.
You'll get used to it.
Now she likes it.
Yep, a red car. I got tickled the day she called me, and this kind of goes along with what I want to talk today. The day she called me, Pop, she called up and she said, Philip, guess what we did today? I said, I don't know, Mom. What did you, we bought a car today. I said, you did. Guess what kind of car we got? And I said, Mom, you got a Lincoln Continental. Because I heard this little whisper. And she went, oh, how did you know that? I said, Mom, you just had that Lincoln Continental sound in your voice.
Yeah, that was quite a thing to her.
And she said, oh, Philip. But anyways, as you recall yesterday, if you listened to the podcast for this week, and by the way, I'm going to be uploading this podcast as the podcast for next week. So this will actually be episode 212, I think. But as I talked about yesterday, one of the ways that we can deal with the uncertainty in our lives is relationship. Being in relationship with people and enjoying the moments that we have spending with people really does seem to help with the uncertainty that our flesh likes to irritate us with and likes to worry us with. But I think also more profound than just being in relationship with human beings is if we can understand the nature of our relationship with God.
Right.
And understand the closeness of that relationship, that He is not far away, but He is here and He is with us. And one of the things that I have told people over and over and over again when they've asked me questions like, well, why didn't you walk away from Christianity when you got into your teens and when you got into your 20s like a lot of people did? And my primary answer for that has always been because I looked at my parents' lives and I saw something that worked. And being a missionary kid, you have a chance of either going good or going bad. There doesn't seem to be much middle ground with missionary kids. But I had the great fortune of being born into a missionary family and being born to parents that I saw them every day exercising the opportunities of their relationship with God. And I heard the stories they told. And so in this drive home, what I'd like to do with my dad here in the car is just go over some of those stories that I've heard from them, and the stories of God's providence and his provision. I think one of the earliest stories I remember was when you were in World War II and you were working on the plane and the bomb dropped.
Yeah. It was a PBM, a big flying boat, and I was up in the bomb bay. The man on top of the wing that was running the hoist, he jerked the cable out before it was properly set, and the bomb dropped down 18 feet to the cement where we were parked. And the men ran every direction, and I shouted at them and said, there's no use running, because the 500-pound bomb will catch you where, no matter how far you try to get. But God kept the bomb from exploding. And that's the reason why I'm here riding home with my son-filled.
And it's the reason I'm here, that the bomb didn't go off. And the next big series of stories that I remember hearing that made an impact in my life was hearing about my dad's process of getting to a Bible college. Because when he came out of the Navy, he had pretty much decided he was just going to go into a vocational school, and that was it. But he got in line, what, for the discharge? And part of the discharge, they were going to ask
they
you?
They were mustering me out. The officer that was doing it said, do you want to go to school? And actually, I was thinking about going back home and grinding tools like I was doing before I got into the Navy. And when I opened my mouth to say, no, I'm not going to school, suddenly something came over me and I said yes. And it frightened me a little bit because it was such a wonderful presence that was there. And the officer said, what kind of school? And what could I say but theological? And so he said, well, preacher, you are now a citizen of the United States.
So from that then, somehow you decided on EBI.
Well, the reason I did was that God sent the principal of Eastern Bible Institute to our camp meeting. And of course, every year my mother went to camp, and so she said, we're ready to go to camp. I went to camp, and who was there but this president of Eastern Bible Institute? And when I heard him, I said, I want that man for my mentor. And so I went to Eastern Bible Institute, and he laid the foundation actually for my life in worship and serving the Lord.
Yeah. So then the next big thing that I remember from the stories is you got to Eastern Bible Institute, and then you got kitchen patrol duty.
Yes, I thought it was a rerun of the Navy, because those days in the Navy we didn't have potato peelers, so we had to peel them by hand, and here I was in Bible school peeling potatoes, but right across from the tub sat a beautiful Italian girl that I couldn't forget.
So there's this beautiful Italian girl that catches your eye, and it turns out that unbeknownst to you at the time, she has a call up for missions on her life.
No, we had a great revival in the school, 9 days without any classes, and God was moving in very special ways. And she was called to Ceylon, this girl. And we had a very loose relationship then, but she was called to Ceylon. And she wouldn't tell anybody, because she asked the Lord if she had to go alone. And the Lord said, no, I have somebody to go with you. And so she was watching, but she didn't want to tell anybody because she wanted to make sure that the right person was going with her. And we met in the bookstore. By that time, she was the clerk of the bookstore in Bible school. When we met there, she said she had gotten a call to Ceylon. Well, of course, she didn't know where Ceylon was. And when she tried to look it up, she was all mixed up. And her brother's a psychologist, so he told her it was all in her mind. But she knew that God had called her to Ceylon. And so I went to talk with her in the bookstore. And she said, I got a call to be a missionary. So naturally, I said, well, I wouldn't mind being a missionary also.
Because you kind of had an eye out for her.
Yes.
Yes.
She was calling me. The Lord was calling her. But I didn't realize it. But when I said Ceylon, her
Wait. So she had not told you at this point going to Ceylon.
No.
So you said, I think I'd kind of like to be a missionary. Yeah. And then she said, well, where would you like to be a missionary
too? Where would you like to go?
Right.
And I said Ceylon.
Right.
And her mouth dropped open and she closed the bookstore and ran up to her room and dropped on her knees and said, dear Lord, not Bill Ferry. And so... But she couldn't shake it. She realized that it was the Lord.
So you all then went ahead, got married.
Yes.
But in order to become missionaries...
I had to get ordained.
You had to get ordained, had to get some pastoral experience. So in that day and age, you didn't necessarily wait for a church to open up. God just gave you a city.
City of 3,000.
City of 3,000. Boyne City.
Yeah.
Way up north on the lower peninsula of Michigan.
20 below zero.
20 below zero. And I remember the story of the coal.
Yeah, we started out with only an old cook stove and green wood. But that really was too cold because... You froze on the bottom and you roasted on top. But then we were able to get a little laundry stove that kept the little apartment where we were warm. And we used coal briquettes at that time, and so we ran out of briquettes. And I told Elvira, well, that the briquettes are all gone. And so she said, take the bucket and go see. I said, but I looked, and I took every briquette that was out there in the garage, and she said, well, take the bucket and go see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took the bucket and came back with a bucket full of briquettes.
Right.
When that burned out, I told Elvira, what are we going to do now? She said, take the bucket and go see.
And we should put in as a side note here that Dad was going through EBI on the GI Bill.
Yeah.
So right. He had pretty much had all his bills paid, but Mom had gone through EBI just on prayer. She didn't have her bills paid, and so she just absolutely had to live by faith. And so she was, at that point, kind of more versed and more used to this idea of living by faith. Anyways, take the bucket and go back out.
So I had to take the bucket again and again. It was amazing that every time I took the bucket and went out there, I was able to bring back a bucket full of briquettes.
Right.
And that lasted over to the next day until we got some money in the mail. And was able to buy a half ton. And I had a little argument with the Lord then. Said, why couldn't you give me a half a ton in the beginning and not make me go out with a bucket and see?
Yes. So I also remember the story about the Model T Ford transmission.
No, that was...
Model A.
V8. of 41... V8 Ford.
Oh, okay.
That was my dad's car, but my dad was sick and he couldn't use it. My sister had a car, so He loaned us the car.
So it's the dead of winter, and you got a problem with the transmission.
Well, I was backing up the car, and those 50, 41 Fords, they really zip on the back wheels, and so it struck a dry spot instead of the ice, and it broke the idler gear in the transmission.
Ah. So now this needs to get fixed, and you don't have any money.
Yeah, the idler gear cost $4, but the mechanic wanted $40 to put it in.
Right.
And that was too much for us to stand. So my wife, Elvira, of course, she said, well, you have to fix it yourself.
So your neighbor had a tool.
He had a whole tool box.
Oh, okay.
That he loaned me. And I had watched my dad. My dad was always tinkering with the car, and I had watched him and hold the bolts. So I knew how to drop the transmission, and I dropped the transmission and dragged it through the snow to the kitchen and got the neighbor to come and help me put it in the kitchen. My wife put down the newspapers on the floor, and I strung all the parts of the transmission out there on the floor. But
so
the problem was I didn't know how to put it back together. And so my wife said, did you pray?
Right, that's the solution.
And I said, I don't need to pray, I need a mechanic. And I got convicted and prayed.
Yes.
And yes. Then started putting those parts back together. And lo and behold, I got it together. But if I remember right, I had three speeds in reverse.
Right.
And so I had to take it apart again, go through the same painful process. But when I got out there, got it back in the kitchen and had the parts out, I found broken gear teeth down in the pan, which would have ruined the transmission.
Right. Right. So you were successful in Boyne
Yes.
City. You then got to the place that you were ready to file your application.
Yes.
So you filed an application to become missionaries.
Yes.
And even God's hand of providence was working at that point, if I recall
Yes,
correctly.
Right. By that time, the church was going quite well, and we were getting ready to build a building, and when Elvira came out and said, what about Ceylon?
Right.
And I said, write and get an application. So she wrote, and when she got the application, when it came back, they said, we have a letter from Ceylon on the desk, and on top of that letter from Ceylon was your desire to go as a young couple to Ceylon, and so they sent us all of the material that was necessary to get ready to go as missionaries.
So then, of course, the next big thing is you have to raise your support.
Yeah.
And that was never an easy thing for you to go and ask people for money.
I didn't think that was necessary. I thought somebody or the organization would raise my support. But when I met the Secretary of Missions, he said, how is your support coming? And I said, support? Am I supposed to raise support? And he said, how do you think you're going to live in Ceylon? And he saw the crestfallen face, and he said, we'll try to help you. And in about 2 or 3 minutes, they had raised, in that district council meeting, they had raised our complete support.
Well, so now you go over to Sri Lanka, and one of the first, how soon was it after you got to Sri Lanka that you were on a committee meeting talking about Colton?
Yes, not long, because the secretary of the executive committee had resigned, and the chairman asked if I would fill the place, and when I went to the first meeting, I looked across and saw a young man who was the Lord just really focused me on him. And he was being disciplined for talking to his fiance. And I couldn't understand it because I came fresh from America.
Right.
So I just listened, though, because I knew I didn't know their culture. And when they came up, I said, could I take him to our house in Kandy, Ceylon, and have him for 6 months? And so that's what happened. He became a world evangelist.
Yeah, and just today, as we were waiting to go into the doctors, I think I had heard this story before, but I think it's a really interesting story. So they say, yes, okay, you can take Colton. He can come live with you for a while. So they come out to the car. Mom and Dad sit up front. Colton's sitting in the back. And then as Dad is driving, you had a thought.
Yeah.
That you felt like, no, that wasn't right. So he pulled off to the side, and he told my mom to get in the back, and he had Colton come up to the front. And you didn't know at the time what the cultural significance of that was.
No, that's right.
And Colton had
deeply impressed.
Yeah, he'd pretty much had it up to here with missionaries. And he suddenly, this missionary was showing him a place of honor in their culture. Mm. And then he came and he lived with my mom and Dad. He began to study his Bible and pray every morning. He and Dad sat across the table and had many, many discussions. Colton then went on to become a worldwide known evangelist. He went on to become the head of the work in Sri Lanka, just tremendously used by God in miracles and casting out demons. It, you know, has really had an impact on Sri Lanka. And we're already home, but the stories will just keep coming. I mean, we could talk for the next several hours about God's provision.
And the orchestration.
And the orchestration. And Dad is 90 now. And we were just talking today about the fact that when he looks back, and even in my life, as I look back, you see these key points in your life when things could have been different, and yet God intervened and spoke a word here and moved a stone there. And what comes out of all that is the understanding that we are not unknown, that God sees our lives.
Yes.
And he moves in our lives if we'll recognize what he's doing. And really, that's the big thing that can help us when uncertainty is gnawing on us. That if we will remember that we are known, if we will get quiet and we will just listen for him, we will find that he is there and that he loves us and that he's speaking to us.
Yes.
This is Phil Ferrand and my dad, and we have made it home.